Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Congressman Raul Grijalva.
First state, unequivocally and with a lot of pride, how glad I am to have been the first member of Congress to endorse Bernie Sanders. I believe like you believe, that Bernie and this People Power campaign is really basically revitalizing our democracy in this country. Confronting all the greed that selects winners and losers in this country, confronting that greed with understanding, ideas, boldness, and being fearless. That is what America needs. This campaign is far from over, my friends. And like you, I'm proud to be here to support Bernie. I'm unrepentant, unbowed, unashamed, and fully committed, not just to talking about change, but to actually creating change. And doing what our democracy demands of us, empowering its people to take our nation and our communities back from the influence of Wall Street and from status quo political decisions that have been made over and over again. Decisions based on who's paying for it, decisions made on who do I respond to and who are the richest special interests that I have to respond to. This is different. This is about you, me, and what we can do on Tuesday to assure that Arizona sends a message across the nation saying, Arizona is progressive, Arizona is smart, Arizona will make a difference in this election. Trump is going to be in this venue tomorrow. And he's going to bring a message of hate, blame, and he's going to bring the privilege of a billionaire from Wall Street to this venue. But today is the important day. We're here. Bernie's here. And he's here with a message about our future. He's here with a message about unity and a message about change. So please, please join me in once again welcoming to Tucson the next President of the United States, Bernie Sanders.
Jack to the
Thank you. Tucson, Tucson, thank you. What an incredible turnout. Thank you. And let me begin by thanking the people of Arizona for sending to the United States Congress one of the strongest and most progressive members of the Congress, Raul Grijalva. Let me also thank Tesoro and Crystal Stark and Jose Miranda and Carolyn Campbell, Morgan Abraham, and Hughes Magana. We began this campaign 10 months ago. And when we began this campaign, we were 70 points behind in the polls. We had no money. We had very little name recognition outside of Vermont. And we were considered to be a fringe candidacy. A lot has happened in 10 months. What has happened in 10 months is that we have won 9 caucuses and primaries. Most of them by double-digit numbers. We now have 850 delegates. And if there is a large turnout here in Arizona on Tuesday, we're going to add to those delegates. And the reason that our campaign has created such momentum, we just came back a few hours ago from Salt Lake City. We had 14,000 people out at a rally. During this campaign, we have talked to 800,000 people. This campaign does not have a super PAC. Does not want a super PAC. Does not need a super PAC. Because this campaign is supported by working families, not Wall Street. Now, my opponent, Hillary Clinton, raises money a little bit different than we do. What we have managed to do in this campaign is bring forth over 5 million individual campaign contributions. 5 million! That is more individual campaign contributions than any candidate in the history of this country at this point of the campaign. Does anybody here know what the average contribution is? $27. $27.
To quote Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg, this is a campaign of the people, by the people, and for the people. Now, Secretary Clinton raises money in a slightly different way. She has a super PAC, and in the last report, her super PAC raised $25 million from special interests, including $15 million from Wall Street. And while we're on Wall Street, Secretary Clinton, as you know, has given a lot of speeches to Wall Street, raising some $225,000 per speech. Now, this is what I think. I think that if somebody gets $225,000 per speech, it must be a brilliant, extraordinary speech, don't you think? I mean, you're not going to be paid two and a quarter for nothing. It must be an earth-shattering speech, a mind-blowing speech, a Shakespearean speech, a speech which, if read widely, will probably transform the world. So for those reasons, I believe the Secretary should release the transcript of those speeches. Now, Secretary has said, well, she is prepared to release the transcripts if other candidates release the transcripts. So I am prepared. No. It's a historic moment. Right here in Tucson. I am prepared to make a dramatic announcement. I am prepared to release all of the speeches I gave to Wall Street. Here they are. Now, I don't know if my feelings are hurt or not, but I have never been invited to give a speech to Wall Street. Not for $225,000, not for $2, not for nothing, not a penny. But if the people on Wall Street want to invite me, I will be delighted to go, and this is what I will tell them. What I will tell them is that their greed, their recklessness, and their illegal behavior drove this country into the worst economic downturn since the 1930s. I will tell them that they were bailed out by the United States Congress against my vote. They were bailed out because the biggest banks were considered too big to fail, the theory being that if they went under, they'd take half the economy with them. And what I would tell them is that today, three out of the four largest banks in America are bigger than they were when we bailed them out because they were too big to fail. I would tell them that the largest six banks in this country have assets equivalent to 58% of the gross domestic product of this country. They issue two-thirds of the credit cards and one-third of the mortgages. Now, when you have that type of concentration of wealth and power, political power, economic power, what would Teddy Roosevelt do if he were alive today? What Teddy Roosevelt would do is break them up. He would be right. Now, what this campaign is about and why we have, I think, brought forth the energy and the enthusiasm that we have seen. And I'll tell you something, what really gratifies me very much. This campaign and our ideas are the future of America. And I want everybody to know, in state after state, we are winning the younger people, and by younger people, I'm talking about people who are 45, 50, or younger. You see, for the young people, someday you will appreciate that being young is 50. That's really young. You know, it's relatively speaking. But there was just a report that came out yesterday. And listen to this, and this really is exciting, and I want to thank everybody here for this. Turns out that in this campaign, for people 30 years of age and younger, we have received more votes than Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump combined. When I was the age of some of you guys, way back in the 60s, there was a slogan going around, don't trust anybody over 30. I think that's right. Now, but the reason that this campaign really is generating so much excitement is that we are doing something very unusual in modern American politics. We are telling the truth. You know, it is easy for me to come up and tell you some jokes, although I have a terrible sense of humor, that wouldn't work, but to tell you some jokes and list off all of the mayors and governors, everybody else who supports me, and go through a poll-tested speech that everything I've told you is tested by all of the polls. I could do that, but I don't. Because I think what we have got to do in this country now is take a very hard look at the very serious problems we face. We can't just sweep them under the rug. We can't ignore them, because you cannot address them unless we bring them up and really study them and go forward. So let me just suggest to you what I think some of the major crises facing this country are. First of all, we are struggling as a nation now to retain our democratic foundation. Now, that sounds radical and it sounds dramatic, but it is true. Right now, in this country, we have a corrupt campaign finance system which is undermining American democracy. Now, democracy is not a radical idea. It is not a hard idea to understand. What it means is one person, one vote. You get a vote, you get a vote, you get a vote. One person, one vote. You're rich, you got one vote. You're poor, you get one vote. You want to vote for me? Great. You want to vote against me? That's fine, too. That's democracy. What democracy is not about are billionaires buying elections. What democracy is not about are the Koch brothers and a handful of billionaires spending $900 million on this campaign cycle to elect candidates who represent the wealthy and the powerful. That is not democracy. That is oligarchy, and together we are going to stop that. Together, we are going to overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision. And together, we're going to move toward public funding of elections. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? What it means is that anybody in this room or anywhere else who wants to run for office, get involved in the political process, believes they have something to offer, conservative, progressive, moderate, should be able to run for office without having to beg wealthy people for campaign contributions. But the attack on democracy is not just campaign finance. Right now, we are seeing all over this country cowardly Republican governors and legislatures working overtime to suppress the vote. What we are seeing is, with a terrible Supreme Court decision on the Voting Rights Act, what these governors are doing is making it harder for poor people, for people of color, for old people, and for young people to participate in the political process. Now, we have one of the lowest voter turnout rates of any major country on earth. Our job is to make it easier for people to participate in the political process, not harder. So I say to those cowardly Republican governors, if you are afraid of a free, fair, and democratic election, get out of politics and get another job. If I am elected president, we are going to work. In Vermont, we're kind of modest, you know, we don't want to. We're going to work hard to create a situation where the rule is clear. Anybody in this country, 18 years of age or older, a citizen of this country, they have the right to vote. End of discussion. But it is not just a corrupt campaign finance system and the undermining of democracy, which is so important. It is a rigged economy. And by that I mean that while today we are a lot better off economically than we were when Bush left office, thank you, President Obama, the truth is that for the last 30 or 40 years, the middle class of this country has been disappearing. And for the young people, let me tell you this. If we do not get our act together economically, for the first time in the modern history of this country, your generation will have a lower standard of living than your parents. When we talk about a rigged economy, and you're not going to see this on television, and that's part of the problem. There's a media that doesn't talk about the most important issues facing America. But when you talk about a rigged economy, understand today, and I want you to think about this, the top one-tenth of 1%, not 1%, one-tenth of 1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. Got that? Today, the 20 wealthiest people, 20 people, own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million Americans. And let me tell you what a rigged economy is really about. The wealthiest family in this country is the Walton family that owns Walmart. They're worth, I don't know what they're worth, somewhere around $60 billion, maybe more than that. They're trying to get by. It's tough. But here's the point. The Walton family that owns Walmart pays their employees wages that are so low that many of their workers have to go on food stamps, have to go on Medicaid, have to go into subsidized housing. Who pays for those food stamps and Medicaid? You do. So you have the absurd situation that working families in this country are literally subsidizing the business of the wealthiest family in America. That's how the rigged economy works. And I say to the Walton family, get off of welfare, pay your workers a living wage. But when we talk about the economy, it's more than just a grotesque level of distribution of wealth. What I want in this campaign, what we're fighting for, is for people to think outside of the box. Think outside of the options and the choices that the media tells you you have to think within. For example, just think about this for 1 second. Everybody here knows that in the last 20, 30 years, there has been an explosion of technology. And what that means is every worker in America, or almost every worker, is much more productive, produces more than that worker did in a similar job 30 years ago. If that is the case, if people are producing more, why is it that millions of people are working longer hours for lower wages? Why is it that in real inflation accounted for dollars, the median male worker, that male worker in the middle of the economy, is making 700 bucks less than he did 43 years ago, while the woman worker is making 1,000 bucks less than she made in 2007? That's what we have got to ask ourselves. Why is this happening? Why is it that in my state of Vermont, and I'm sure here in Arizona, you got people working not one job, but two jobs? We got people here working two jobs? Right. People working three jobs trying to cobble together some health care and some income to survive. You got mom working, you got dad working, you got the kids working, you got marriages being stressed out. You got parents not having the time to spend with their own kids. Is that right? And yet, despite that, and I want you all to hear this, today our people in this country work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world. Japanese are very hard workers. We work longer hours than do the Japanese. And at the end of all of that hard work that all of you are doing, turns out that 58% of all new income goes to the top 1%. What this campaign is about is saying, you know what? We are going to have an economy that works for all of us, not just the people on top. And when we talk about the real issues, the issues that many people choose not to talk about, it is important for us to talk about a broken criminal justice system. Again, think outside of the box and ask yourself a simple question. Today, this country is the wealthiest country in the history of the world. And yet, we have more people in jail than any other country on earth. Largely disproportionately African American, Latino, and Native Americans. Well, together, we are going to end that disgrace. And I'll give you an example of what we can and must do. Right now in this country, for kids 17 to 20, real unemployment, if those kids are white, 33%. If those kids are Latino, who graduated high school, 36%. Kids are African American, 51%. You want a radical idea? How about investing in jobs and education rather than jails? When we talk about criminal justice, I trust that all of us are tired of seeing unarmed people being shot. Now, I am a former mayor. I've worked with police officers all over my state and all over this country. Vast majority of police officers are honest and hardworking and are forced to do a very difficult job. But, like any other public official, when a police officer breaks the law, that officer must be held accountable. We have got to demilitarize local police departments. We have got to make police departments look like the diversity of the communities they serve. Now, one of the things that I learned in this campaign, turns out that over the last 30 years, millions of people in this country have had police records because of possession of marijuana. In my view, it is time to rethink the war on drugs. Right now, at the federal level, there is the Controlled Substance Act, which lists marijuana as a Schedule I drug, the highest level, right alongside of heroin. Now, I know, at least I hope I know, that every person here understands that heroin is a killer drug. And that everybody has got to stay away from that killer drug. But marijuana, you know, you could argue it, and people argue the pluses and the minuses, but marijuana is not heroin. And that is why I have introduced legislation that takes marijuana out of the Federal Controlled Substance Act. It is a state decision whether or not to legalize marijuana, but in my view, possession should not be a federal crime. This campaign is doing well because we are listening to ordinary Americans and not just wealthy campaign contributors. We are listening to workers and what workers are telling us they can't make it on $8 or $9 an hour. And that is why we have got to raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. We are listening to senior citizens and disabled veterans. And they are telling us they cannot make it on $11,000 or $12,000 a year Social Security. And nobody can make it on $12,000 a year Social Security. Now, despite that, my Republican colleagues in the Congress, they want to cut Social Security. And I have got some bad news for them. We're not going to cut Social Security. We're going to expand Social Security benefits. This campaign is listening to young people. And what young people are telling me is they say, Bernie, why does it happen that when I do what I am supposed to do, everybody says correctly that education is enormously important, that you should go out and get all of the education you can. It's important for your own life. It's important for the future of this country. But then what happens is millions of people end up with $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of student debt. Now, to my mind, that is pretty crazy stuff. Why are we punishing people for doing exactly what we have told them to do? We are living in a competitive global economy. We need the best educated workforce in the world. And in my view, today, when we look at public education, it's not good enough to say first grade through 12th grade. That was great years ago. The world has changed. The economy has changed. Today, a college degree, in many respects, is the equivalent of what a high school degree was 50 years ago. You had a high school degree, you can go out and get a pretty good job. Today, that's what a college degree is about, and that is why I believe the time is now for when we talk about public education. It's not just first grade through 12th grade. We have got to make public colleges and universities tuition free. But it is not just free tuition. What it is also is the need to deal with the student debt crisis. It is wrong that people who have $30,000, $50,000 in debt are paying 6, 8, 10% interest rates. That's why our legislation will give people with debt the opportunity to refinance at the lowest interest rates they can find. This campaign is listening to the Latino community. And what the Latino community is telling me is that when 11 million people in this country today are undocumented, we have got to take those people out of the shadows. We've got to end the exploitation. We've got to end the fear. And we need a path toward citizenship. Now, that is my view. There are people in this country who disagree with me, and that's fine. But what is not fine is when you have candidates for president and other people who are spewing out hatred and bigotry against Mexicans. That is not acceptable. And if elected president, we're going to put an end to that hatred and that bigotry. We're going to bring our people together. As a member of the Senate, I have supported the DREAM Act. All of us have to recognize dreamers for what they are, American kids who deserve the right to be legally in this country, the country they know is their home. And that is why I support President Obama's DACA program. And that is why I would expand those programs to include the parents of dreamers. And our job as a nation is to unite families, not divide families. And when we talk about immigration reform and criminal justice, let me tell you that I've introduced legislation to ban private prisons and private detention facilities. And let me say a word right now to those families who have been torn apart by deportations. I have spoken to too many families, too many children who are literally forced to live apart. This is not acceptable, so let me be clear. Under my administration, anyone who has been deported but who would have been protected by the 2013 Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill will be allowed to return. Children need their parents. And let me also say that if elected president, Sheriff Arpaio and people like him will not continue to be able to act in the unconscionable way they are acting today. You know, just last week, my wife was in the area of Tent City. She wanted to talk to some families there. And who popped in but Mr. Arpaio? But if you know my wife, she does not get intimidated easily. So she asked the sheriff about racial profiling. He had nothing to say. She asked them about keeping people in a tent where the temperature gets 130 degrees. He had nothing significant to say. Let's be clear, that type of behavior on the part of this sheriff is not what this country is supposed to be about. We're going to end that. This campaign is listening to the Native American community. And I think there is no disagreement that the way this country has treated Native Americans from day one has been shameful. Native Americans have been lied to. They have been cheated. Treaties that they signed have been broken. And today, we find ourselves in a situation where in virtually every part of this country, and I've been to many parts and I've met with tribal leaders, unemployment sky high, poverty sky high, suicide rates sky high, kids dropping out of school, women being raped. We owe the Native American community so much, so much. They have helped shape the best elements of our culture. They, more than anybody, have taught us how to respect the environment and the and the need to live with nature, not against nature. I am a member of the Senate Committee on the Environment. And in that respect, in that position, I have had the privilege of meeting with scientists all over this country and around the world. And what the scientists tell me is the debate is over. Climate change is real. Climate change is caused by human activity, and climate change is already causing massive problems in this country and around the world. And what the scientists tell us, if we do not get our act together in the very near future, what will happen is that by the end of this century, this planet will be between 5 and 10 degrees warmer. Now, some people may think, well, 5 or 10 degrees, not a big deal. It is a huge deal. It will be cataclysmic. And what it will mean is more drought, more flood, more extreme weather disturbances, more acidification of the ocean, more rising sea levels, more international conflict as people fight over limited natural resources. We have a moral responsibility to leave this planet in a way that is healthy and habitable for future generations. We have, as a people, we have got to summon up the courage to take on the greed of the fossil fuel industry and tell them that their short-term profits are not more important than the future of this planet. And what we have to do is work with China, Russia, India, and countries all over the world in transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. If I have anything to say about it, your state, which has an incredible natural resource called the sun, your state should be one of the leaders in this country and, in fact, the world in producing solar energy. Now, I have been criticized for saying this, so let me say it again as clearly as I can. Healthcare, in my view, is a right, not a privilege. Now, again, when you think outside of the box, ask yourself a simple question. How does it happen that every major country on Earth, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Holland, Scandinavia, Canada, all major countries provide health care to all their people as a right? There is one major country that does not. You're living in it. We're going to change that. Now, I'm on the committee that helped write the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act has done a lot of good things. And by the way, I cannot believe that you have governors all over this country who have refused to allow for the expansion of Medicaid. That is an outrage. And that's what we put in the bill. What the bill also did is end this obscenity called pre-existing conditions. And we added another 17 million people to the ranks of the insured. But today, despite the gains of the ACA, 29 million people have no health insurance. Many of you are underinsured with high deductibles and copayments, correct? And we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. You want to hear crazy? This is crazy. One out of five Americans who go to a doctor and get a prescription can't afford to fill that prescription. That's crazy. In my view, we need to move toward universal health care and a Medicare for All health care program. Everybody here understands that real change in this country has never happened from the top on down. It has always happened from the bottom on up. That is the history of workers coming together to form unions. That is the history of the women's movement. A 100 years ago, not a long time ago, women in America did not have the right to vote. Women could not get the education they wanted. Women could not do the jobs they wanted. But what happened is women and their male allies said, you know what, that's wrong. In America, women will not be considered as second-class citizens. They fought back. That is the history of the civil rights movement. African Americans and their white allies by the millions said, you know what? We're not going to tolerate racism and bigotry and discrimination and segregation. And people fought and went to jail and were killed in the fight to end racism in America. It takes place from the bottom on up. And let me give you one more contemporary example. If we were in this room 10 years ago and somebody said, you know, Bernie, I think the gay marriage will be legal in 50 states in America in the year 2015, the person next to him would have said, what are you smoking? But you know what happened? Because the gay community and their straight allies stood up against horrendous and ugly bigotry. What ended up happening is America said, you know what? People should have the right to love whoever they want, regardless of their gender. In other words, change takes place in that moment in history when people look around them and say, this is wrong, this is unacceptable, this should not be happening in America, whether it is racism or sexism or homophobia or whatever it is. People say, enough, we want to get rid of it. And change takes place. In my view, we are at that moment, that pivotal moment today. People all over this country are saying, no, the United States should not have a grotesque level of income and wealth inequality. We should not be having the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country when we're seeing a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires. People are saying, how in God's earth could we see a situation like Flint, Michigan, where children are being poisoned? And what the American people are saying, we've got to rebuild our crumbling water systems, our infrastructure, and we can put millions of people to work doing that. And more people are saying, no, young Americans should not graduate college $50,000 in debt and have to pay that debt off for decades. And Americans are saying, how is it that profitable corporations making billions of dollars a year in profit, in some cases, pay zero in federal taxes? And people are saying, how could it be that the United States is one of the few countries in the world that doesn't guarantee paid family and medical leave? In other words, now is that moment in history where we look around us and we say, we can do much, much better as a nation. And people are looking around and saying, you know what? Establishment politics and establishment economics and the same old, that ain't going to work anymore. People who receive zillions of dollars from powerful special interests, they are not going to make the changes that need to happen. And let me just tell you what no other candidate for president will tell you, is that the only way change is going to happen, it's not by a president alone. The ruling class of this country has so much power that the only way we change America is when millions of people stand up and say loudly and clearly, enough is enough. We need a government which represents all of the people, not just wealthy campaign contributors. In fact, what we need is a political revolution. And on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, the people of this great state will be able to put Arizona in the position of joining that political revolution. What this campaign has taught me so far is we win when there is a large voter turnout. We lose when there is a low voter turnout. Please come out on Tuesday. Drag your friends and your family. Let's go vote. Thank you.